Keep in mind that your potential to experience emotional pain comes from the way you define and interpret the information you're exposed to. When you adopt these five truths, your expectations will always be in line with the psychological realities of the market environment. With the appropriate expectations, you will eliminate your potential to define and interpret market information as either painful or threatening, and you thereby effectively neutralize the emotional risk of trading. The idea is to create a carefree state of mind that completely accepts the fact that there are always unknown forces operating in the market. When you make these truths a fully functional part of your belief system, the rational part of your mind will defend these truths in the same way it defends any other belief you hold about the nature of trading. This means that, at least at the rational level, your mind will automatically defend against the idea or assumption that you can know for sure what will happen next. It's a contradiction to believe that each trade is a unique event with an uncertain outcome and random in relationship to any other trade made in the past, and at the same time, to believe you know for sure what will happen next and to expect to be right. If you really believe in an uncertain outcome, then you also have to expect that virtually anything can happen. Otherwise, the moment you let your mind hold on to the notion that you know, you stop taking all of the unknown variables into consideration. Your mind won't let you have it both ways. If you believe you know something, the moment is no longer unique. If the moment isn't unique, then everything is known or knowable. That is, there's nothing not to know. However, the moment you stop factoring in what you don't or can't know about the situation, instead of being available to perceive what the market is offering, you make yourself susceptible to all of the typical trading errors. For example, if you really believed in an uncertain outcome, would you ever consider putting on a trade without defining your risk in advance? Would you ever hesitate to cut a loss if you really believed you didn't know? What about trading errors like jumping the gun? How could you anticipate a signal that hasn't yet manifested itself in the market if you weren't convinced that you were going to miss out? Why would you ever let a winning trade turn into a loser, or not have a systematic way of taking profits if you weren't convinced the market was going your way indefinitely? Why would you hesitate to take a trade or not put it on at all, unless you were convinced that it was a loser when the market was at your original entry point? Why would you break your money management rules by trading too large a position relative to your equity or emotional tolerance to sustain a loss if you weren't positive that you had a sure thing? Finally, if you really believed in a random distribution between wins and losses, could you ever feel betrayed by the market? If you flipped a coin and guessed right, you wouldn't necessarily expect to be right on the next flip simply because you were right on the last. Nor would you expect to be wrong on the next flip if you were wrong on the last. Because you believe in a random distribution between the sequence of heads and tails, your expectations would be perfectly aligned with the reality of the situation. You would certainly like to be right, and if you were, that would be great. But if you were wrong, then you would not feel betrayed by the flip, because you know and accept that there are unknown variables at work that affect the outcome. Unknown means not something your rational thinking process can take into consideration in advance of the flip, except to fully accept that you don't know. As a result, there is little, if any, potential to experience the kind of emotional pain that wells up when you feel betrayed. As a trader, when you're expecting a random outcome, you will always be at least a little surprised at whatever the market does, even if it conforms exactly to your definition of an edge and you end up with a winning trade. However, expecting a random outcome doesn't mean that you can't use your full reasoning and analytical abilities to project an outcome, or that you can't guess what's going to happen next, or have a hunch or feeling about it, because you can. Furthermore, you can be right in each instance. You just can't expect to be right. And if you are right, you can't expect that whatever you did that worked the last time will work again the next time, even though the situation may look, sound, or feel exactly the same. Anything that you are perceiving now in the market will never be exactly the same as some previous experience that exists in your mental environment. But that doesn't mean that your mind, as a natural characteristic of the way it functions, won't try to make the two identical. There will be similarities between the now moment and something that you know from the past. But those similarities only give you something to work with by putting the odds of success in your favor. If you approach trading from the perspective that you don't know what will happen next, you will circumvent your mind's natural inclination to make the now moment identical to some earlier experience. As unnatural as it seems to do so, you can't let some previous experience, either negative or extremely positive, dictate your state of mind. If you do, it will be very difficult, if not impossible, to perceive what the market is communicating from its perspective. When I put on a trade, all I expect is that something will happen. Regardless of how good I think my edge is, I expect nothing more than for the market to move or to express itself in some way. However, there are some things that I do know for sure. I know that based on the market's past behavior, the odds of it moving in the direction of my trade are good or acceptable, at least in relationship to how much I am willing to spend to find out if it does. I also know before getting into a trade how much I am willing to let the market move against my position. There is always a point at which the odds of success are greatly diminished in relation to the profit potential. At that point, it's not worth spending any more money to find out if the trade is going to work. If the market reaches that point, I know without any doubt, hesitation, or internal conflict that I will exit the trade. The loss doesn't create any emotional damage, because I don't interpret the experience negatively. To me, losses are simply the cost of doing business, or the amount of money I need to spend to make myself available for the winning trades. If, on the other hand, the trade turns out to be a winner, in most cases I know for sure at what point I am going to take my profits. If I don't know for sure, I certainly have a very good idea. The best traders are in the now moment because there's no stress. There's no stress because there's nothing at risk, other than the amount of money they are willing to spend on a trade. They are not trying to be right or trying to avoid being wrong, neither are they trying to prove anything. If and when the market tells them that their edges aren't working or that it's time to take profits, their minds do nothing to block this information. They completely accept what the market is offering them and they wait for the next edge. Chapter 8. Working with your beliefs. Now the task before you is to properly integrate the five fundamental truths presented in Chapter 7 in your mental environment at a functional level. To help you do that, we will take an in-depth look at beliefs, their nature, properties, and characteristics. However, before we do that, I will review and organize the major concepts presented thus far into a much clearer and more practical framework. What you learn from this and the next two chapters will form the foundation for understanding everything you need to do to achieve your goals as a trader. Defining the problem. At the most fundamental level, the market is simply a series of up and down ticks that form patterns. Technical analysis defines these patterns as edges. Any particular pattern defined as an edge is simply an indication that there is a higher probability that the market will move in one direction over the other. However, there is a major mental paradox here because a pattern implies consistency, or at least a consistent outcome. But the reality is each pattern is a unique occurrence. They may look or measure exactly the same from one occurrence to the next, but the similarities are only on the surface. The underlying force behind each pattern is traders, and the traders who contribute to the formation of one pattern are always different from the traders who contribute to the next. So the outcome of each pattern is random relative to one another. Our minds have an inherent design characteristic, the association mechanism, that can make this paradox difficult to deal with. Now these edges, or the patterns they represent, flow by in every time frame, making the market a never-ending stream of opportunities to get in, get out, scratch a trade, take profits, cut losses, or add to or detract from a position. In other words, from the market's perspective, each moment presents each one of us traders with the opportunity to do something on our own behalf. What prevents us from perceiving each now moment as an opportunity to do something for ourselves or to act appropriately even when we do? Our fears. What is the source of our fears? We know it's not the market, because from the market's perspective, the up and down ticks and the patterns they create are neither positively or negatively charged. As a result, the up and down ticks themselves have no capacity to cause us to enter into any particular state of mind, negative or positive, lose our objectivity, make errors, or take us out of the opportunity flow. If it's not the market that causes us to experience a negatively charged state of mind, then what does cause it? The way we define and interpret the information we perceive. If that's the case, then what determines what we perceive and how we define and interpret that information? What we believe, or what we assume to be true. Our beliefs, working in conjunction with the association and pain avoidance mechanisms, act as a force on our five senses, causing us to perceive, define, and interpret market information in a way that is consistent with what we expect. What we expect is synonymous with what we believe, or assume to be true. Expectations are beliefs projected into some future moment. Each moment from the market's perspective is unique. But if the information being generated by the market is similar in quality, properties, or characteristic to something that is already in our minds, the two sets of information, outside and inside, automatically become linked. When this connection is made, it triggers a state of mind, confidence, euphoria, fear, terror, disappointment, regret, betrayal, etc., that corresponds to whatever belief, assumption, or memory the outside information was linked to. This makes it seem as if what is outside is exactly the same as whatever is already inside of us. It's our state of mind that makes the truth of whatever we're perceiving outside of us, in the market, seem indisputable and beyond question. Our state of mind is always the absolute truth. If I feel confident, then I am confident. If I feel afraid, then I am afraid. We can't dispute the quality of energy flowing through our mind and body at any given moment. And because I know as an indisputable fact how I feel, you could say that I also know the truth of what I'm perceiving outside of me in the same moment. The problem is that how we feel is always the absolute truth. But the beliefs that triggered our state of mind or feeling may or may not be true relative to the possibilities that exist in the market at any given moment. Recall the example of the boy and the dog. The boy knew for an absolute fact that each dog he encountered after the first was threatening, because of the way he felt when one came into his field of awareness. These other dogs did not cause his fear. His negatively charged memory, working in conjunction with the association and his pain avoidance mechanism, caused his fear. He experienced his own version of the truth, which did not correspond with the possibilities that existed from the environment's perspective. His belief about the nature of dogs was limited relative to the possible characteristics and traits expressed by dogs. Yet the state of mind he experienced every time he encountered a dog caused him to believe that he knew exactly what to expect from them. This same process causes us to believe that we know exactly what to expect from the market, when the reality is there are always unknown forces operating at every moment. The trouble is, the instant we think we know what to expect, we simultaneously stop taking all the unknown forces and the various possibilities created by those forces into consideration. The unknown forces are other traders waiting to enter or exit trades based on their beliefs about the future. In other words, we really can't know exactly what to expect from the market until we can read the minds of all the traders who have the potential to act as a force on price movement. Not a very likely possibility. As traders, We can't afford to indulge ourselves in any form of, I know what to expect from the market. We can know exactly what an edge looks, sounds, or feels like, and we can know exactly how much we need to risk to find out if that edge is going to work. We can know that we have a specific plan as to how we are going to take profits if a trade works. But that's it. If what we think we know starts expanding to what the market is going to do, we're in trouble. And all that's required to put us into a negatively charged, I know what to expect from the market, state of mind, is for any belief, memory, or attitude to cause us to interpret the up and down ticks or any market information as anything but an opportunity to do something on our own behalf. Defining the terms. What are the objectives? Ultimately, of course, making money is everyone's objective. But if trading were only a matter of making money, listening to this audiobook wouldn't be necessary. Putting on a winning trade or even a series of winning trades requires absolutely no skill. On the other hand, creating consistent results and being able to keep what we've created does require skill. Making money consistently is a byproduct of acquiring and mastering certain mental skills. The degree to which you understand this is the same degree to which you will stop focusing on the money and focus instead on how you can use your trading as a tool to master these skills. What are the skills? Consistency is the result of a carefree, objective state of mind, where we are making ourselves available to perceive and act upon whatever the market is offering us, from its perspective, in any given now moment. What is a carefree state of mind? Carefree means confident, but not euphoric. When you are in a carefree state of mind, you won't feel any fear, hesitation, or compulsion to do anything, because you've effectively eliminated the potential to define and interpret market information as threatening. To remove the sense of threat, you have to accept the risk completely. When you have accepted the risk, you will be at peace with any outcome. To be at peace with any outcome, you must reconcile anything in your mental environment that conflicts with the five fundamental truths about the market. What's more, you also have to integrate these truths into your mental system as core beliefs. What is objectivity? Objectivity is a state of mind where you have conscious access to everything you have learned about the nature of market movement. In other words, nothing is being blocked or altered by your pain avoidance mechanisms. What does it mean to make yourself available? Making yourself available means trading from the perspective that you have nothing to prove. You aren't trying to win or to avoid losing. You aren't trying to get your money back or to take revenge on the market. In other words, you come to the market with no agenda other than to let it unfold in any way that it chooses and to be in the best state of mind to recognize and take advantage of the opportunities it makes available to you. What is the now moment? Trading in the now moment means that there is no potential to associate an opportunity to get into, get out of, add to, or detract from a trade with a past experience that already exists in your mental environment. How the fundamental truths relate to the skills. 1. Anything can happen. Why? Because there are always unknown forces operating in every market at every moment, it takes only one trader somewhere in the world to negate the positive outcome of your edge. That's all. Only one. Regardless of how much time, effort, or money you've invested in your analysis, from the market's perspective, there are no exceptions to this truth. Any exceptions that may exist in your mind will be a source of conflict and potentially cause you to perceive market information as threatening. 2. You don't need to know what is going to happen next in order to make money. Why? Because there is a random distribution between wins and losses for any given set of variables that define an edge. Refer to number 3. In other words, based on the past performance of your edge, you may know that out of the next 20 trades, 12 will be winners and 8 will be losers. What you don't know is the sequence of wins and losses, or how much money the market is going to make available on the winning trades. This truth makes trading a probability or numbers game. When you really believe that trading is simply a probability game, concepts like right and wrong or win and lose no longer have the same significance. As a result, your expectations will be in harmony with the possibilities. Keep in mind that nothing has more potential to cause emotional discord than our unfulfilled expectations. Emotional pain is the universal response when the outside world expresses itself in a way that doesn't reflect what we expect or believe to be true. As a result, any market information that does not confirm our expectations is automatically defined and interpreted as threatening. That interpretation causes us to adopt a negatively charged, defensive state of mind, where we end up creating the very experience we are trying to avoid. Market information is only threatening if you are expecting the market to do something for you. Otherwise, if you don't expect the market to make you right, you have no reason to be afraid of being wrong. If you don't expect the market to make you a winner, you have no reason to be afraid of losing. If you don't expect the market to keep going in your direction indefinitely, there is no reason to leave money on the table. Finally, if you don't expect to be able to take advantage of every opportunity just because you perceived it and it presented itself, you have no reason to be afraid of missing out. On the other hand, if you believe that all you need to know is 1. The odds are in your favor before you put on a trade. 2. How much it's going to cost to find out if the trade is going to work. 3. You don't need to know what's going to happen next to make money on that trade. And 4. Anything can happen. Then how can the market make you wrong? What information could the market generate about itself that would cause your pain avoidance mechanisms to kick in so that you exclude that information from your awareness? None that I can think of. If you believe that anything can happen and that you don't need to know what is going to happen next to make money, then you will always be right. Your expectations will always be in harmony with the conditions as they exist from the market's perspective, effectively neutralizing your potential to experience emotional pain. By the same token, how can a losing trade, or even a series of losers, have the typical negative effect if you really believe that trading is a probability or numbers game? If your edge puts the odds in your favor, then every loss puts you that much closer to a win. When you really believe this, your response to a losing trade will no longer take on a negative emotional quality. 3. There is a random distribution between wins and losses for any given set of variables that define an edge. If every loss puts you that much closer to a win, you will be looking forward to the next occurrence of your edge, ready and waiting to jump in without the slightest reservation or hesitation. On the other hand, if you still believe that trading is about analysis or about being right, then after a loss, you will anticipate the occurrence of your next edge with trepidation, wondering if it's going to work. This, in turn, will cause you to start gathering evidence for or against the trade. You will gather evidence for the trade if your fear of missing out is greater than your fear of losing. And you will gather information against the trade if your fear of losing is greater than your fear of missing out. In either case, you will not be in the most conducive state of mind to produce consistent results. 4. An edge is nothing more than an indication of a higher probability of one thing happening over another. Creating consistency requires that you completely accept that trading isn't about hoping, wondering, or gathering evidence one way or the other to determine if the next trade is going to work. The only evidence you need to gather is whether the variables you use to define an edge are present at any given moment. When you use other information outside the parameters of your edge to decide whether you will take the trade, you are adding random variables to your trading regime. Adding random variables makes it extremely difficult, if not impossible, to determine what works and what doesn't. If you're never certain about the viability of your edge, you won't feel too confident about it. to whatever degree you lack confidence, you will experience fear. The irony is, you will be afraid of random, inconsistent results without realizing that your random, inconsistent approach is creating exactly what you are afraid of. On the other hand, if you believe that an edge is simply a higher probability of one thing happening over another, and there's a random distribution between wins and losses for any given set of variables that define an edge, why would you gather other evidence for or against a trade? To a trader operating out of these two beliefs, gathering other evidence wouldn't make any sense. Or, let me put it this way. Gathering other evidence makes about as much sense as trying to determine whether the next flip of a coin will be heads, after the last 10 flips came up tails. Regardless of what evidence you find to support heads coming up, there is still a 50% chance that the next flip will come up tails. By the same token, regardless of how much evidence you gather to support acting or not acting on a trade, it still only takes one trader somewhere in the world to negate the validity of any, if not all, of your evidence. The point is, why bother? If the market is offering you a legitimate edge, determine the risk and take the trade. 5. Every moment in the market is unique. Take a moment and think about the concept of uniqueness. Unique means not like anything else that exists or has ever existed. As much as we may understand the concept of uniqueness, our minds don't deal with it very well on a practical level. As we have already discussed, our minds are hardwired to automatically associate, without conscious awareness, anything in the exterior environment that is similar to anything that is already inside of us in the form of a memory, belief, or attitude. This creates an inherent contradiction between the way we naturally think about the world and the way the world exists. No two moments in the external environment will ever exactly duplicate themselves. To do so, every atom or every molecule would have to be in the exact same position they were in some previous moment. Not a very likely possibility. Yet, based on the way our minds are designed to process information, we will experience the now moment in the environment as being exactly the same as some previous moment as it exists inside our minds. If each moment is like no other, then there's nothing at the level of your rational experience that can tell you for sure that you know what will happen next. So, I will say again, why bother trying to know? When you try to know, you are, in essence, trying to be right. I am not implying here that you can't predict what the market will do next and be right, because you most certainly can. It's in the trying that you run into all of the problems. If you believe that you correctly predicted the market once, you will naturally try to do it again. As a result, your mind will automatically start scanning the market for the same pattern, circumstance, or situation that existed the last time you correctly predicted its movement. When you find it, your state of mind will make it seem as if everything is exactly as it was the last time. The problem is that, from the market's perspective, it is not the same. As a result, you are setting yourself up for disappointment. What separates the best traders from all the rest is that they've trained their minds to believe in the uniqueness of each moment. Although this training usually takes the form of losing several fortunes before they really believe in the concept of uniqueness. This belief acts as a counteracting force, neutralizing the automatic association mechanism. When you truly believe that each moment is unique, then by definition, there isn't anything in your mind for the association mechanism to link that moment to. This belief acts as an internal force, causing you to disassociate the now moment in the market from any previous moment filed away in your mental environment. The stronger your belief in the uniqueness of each moment, the lower your potential to associate. The lower your potential to associate, the more open your mind will be to perceive what the market is offering you from its perspective. Moving toward the zone. When you completely accept the psychological realities of the market, you will correspondingly accept the risks of trading. When you accept the risks of trading, you eliminate the potential to define market information in painful ways. When you stop defining and interpreting market information in painful ways, there is nothing for your mind to avoid, nothing to protect against. When there's nothing to protect against, you will have access to all that you know about the nature of market movement. Nothing will get blocked, which means you will perceive all the possibilities you have learned about, objectively. And since your mind is open to a true exchange of energy, you will quite naturally start discovering other possibilities, edges, that you formerly couldn't perceive. For your mind to be open to a true exchange of energy, you can't be in a state of knowing or believing that you already know what's going to happen next. When you are at peace with not knowing what's going to happen next, you can interact with the market from a perspective where you will be making yourself available to let the market tell you, from its perspective, what is likely to happen next. At that point, you will be in the best state of mind to spontaneously enter the zone, where you are tapped into the now moment opportunity flow. Chapter 9. The Nature of Beliefs. At this point, if you can sense the benefits of adopting the five fundamental truths about trading, then the task is to learn how to properly integrate these truths into your mental system as core beliefs that are not in conflict with any other beliefs you may hold. At first glance, this may seem like a daunting task, and under other circumstances, I would agree with you. But it won't be, because in Chapter 11, I'll give you a simple trading exercise specifically designed to properly install these truths as beliefs at a functional level. A functional level is one where you find yourself just naturally operating out of a carefree state of mind, perceiving exactly what you need to do and doing it without hesitation or internal conflict. However, I do have a word of caution for those of you who have already listened to the exercise. On the surface, the trading exercise sounds so simple that you may be tempted to do it now, before you thoroughly understand the implications of what you are doing. I strongly suggest that you reconsider. There are some subtle yet profound dynamics involved in the process of learning how to install new beliefs and change any existing beliefs that are in conflict with the new ones. Understanding the trading exercise itself is easy. Understanding how to use the exercise to change your beliefs is another matter entirely. If you do the exercise without understanding the concepts presented in this chapter and the next, you will not achieve the desired results. It is also important that you not take for granted the amount of mental effort you may have to expend to train your mind to fully accept these principles of success, regardless of how well you understand them. Remember Bob, the CTA who believed he thoroughly understood the concept of probabilities, but didn't have the ability to function from a probabilistic perspective. Many people make the mistake of assuming that once they understand something, the insight inherent in their new understanding automatically becomes a functional part of their identity. Most of the time, understanding a concept is only a first step in the process of integrating that concept at a functional level. This is especially true of concepts that deal with thinking in probabilities. Our minds are not naturally wired to be objective or to stay in the now moment. This means we have to actively train our minds to think from these perspectives. In addition to the training involved, there may be any number of conflicting beliefs to work through. Conflicting beliefs will have the effect of sabotaging your best intentions to operate from an objective state of mind or to experience the now-moment opportunity flow. For example, let's say you've spent years learning how to read the markets or spent large sums of money developing or buying technical systems, just so you could find out what was going to happen next. Now you have come to understand that you don't have to know what's going to happen next, and that even trying to know will detract from your ability to be objective or to stay in the moment. What we have is a direct conflict between your old belief that you need to know what will happen next to be successful, and your new understanding that you don't need to know. Now, will your new understanding suddenly neutralize all the time, money, and energy expended on reinforcing the belief that you need to know? I wish it were that easy. And for some lucky few, It may be. If you will recall in Chapter 4, when I talked about psychological distance in relationship to software code, I said that some traders may already be so close to these new perspectives that all they need is to put together a few of the missing pieces to create a mind-altering, aha experience. However, based on my experience of working with well over 1,000 traders, I can say that most are not close to these perspectives at all. For those of you who are not, it may take a considerable amount of mental work, over a considerable amount of time, to properly integrate your new understandings about trading into your mental environment. The good news is that ultimately, the exercise I present in Chapter 11 will install the 5 fundamental truths and resolve many of the potential conflicts, but only if you know exactly what you are doing and why you are doing it. That is the subject of this and the next chapter. The origins of a belief. What can we learn about the nature of beliefs? And how can we use that knowledge to create a mindset that fosters our desire to be a consistently successful trader? These are the 2 questions I am going to focus on answering in this chapter. First, let's look at the origin of our beliefs. As you may recall, memories, distinctions, and beliefs exist in the form of energy, specifically structured energy. Earlier, I lumped these 3 mental components together to illustrate 1. That memories, distinctions, and beliefs do not exist as physical matter. 2. That the cause and effect relationship that exists between ourselves and the external environment brings these components into existence. And 3. How the cause and effect relationship reverses so that we can perceive in the external environment what we have learned about. To get at the origins of our beliefs, we're going to have to unbundle these components to illustrate the difference between a memory and a belief. The best way to do this is to imagine ourselves in the mind of an infant. I would think that at the very beginning of a child's life, the memories of his experiences would exist in their purest form. By that I mean that the memories of what he has seen, heard, smelled, touched, or tasted exist in his mind as pure sensory information that is not organized or attached to any specific words or concepts. Therefore, I'm going to define a pure memory as sensory information stored in its original form. A belief, on the other hand, is a concept about the nature of the way the external environment expresses itself. A concept combines pure sensory information with a symbol system we call language. For example, most infants have a pure memory of how it feels to be lovingly nurtured by a parent, but it isn't until the infant is taught to link or associate certain words with the pure sensory information stored in his memory that he will form a concept about how it feels to be lovingly nurtured. The phrase, "life is wonderful," is a concept. By themselves, the words make up a meaningless collection of abstract symbols. But if a child is either taught or decides to connect these words to his positively charged feelings of being nurtured, then the letters are no longer a collection of abstract symbols, and the words are no longer an abstract phrase. "Life is wonderful" becomes a definitive distinction about the nature of existence or the way the world works. By the same token, if the child didn't get enough nurturing relative to his needs, he could just as easily link his feelings of emotional pain to a concept like "life isn't fair" or "the world is an awful place." In any case, when the positive or negative energy from our memories or experiences become linked to a set of words we call a concept, the concept becomes energized and, as a result, is transformed into a belief about the nature of reality. If you consider that concepts are structured by the framework of a language and energized by our experiences, it becomes clear why I refer to beliefs as structured energy. When a belief comes into existence, what does it do? What is its function? In some ways, it seems ludicrous to ask those questions. After all, we all have beliefs. We are constantly expressing our beliefs both verbally and through our actions. Furthermore, we are constantly interacting with other people's beliefs as they express them. Yet, if I ask, What exactly does a belief do? Chances are your mind will go blank. On the other hand, if I were to ask about the functions of your eyes, ears, nose, or teeth, you would have no problem answering. Since beliefs are such important component parts of our makeup, in terms of their impact on the quality of our lives, it certainly has to be one of life's great ironies that they are also the least thought about and understood. What I mean by least thought about is, if we have a problem with one of our body parts, we naturally focus our attention on that part and think about what we need to do to fix the problem. However, it doesn't necessarily occur to us that the problems we may be having with the quality of our lives, for example, lack of happiness, a sense of dissatisfaction, or lack of success in some area, are rooted in our beliefs. This lack of consideration is a universal phenomenon. One of the prominent characteristics of beliefs is that they make what we experience seem self-evident and beyond question. In fact, if it weren't for your intense desire to experience consistent success as a trader, it's unlikely you would be delving into this topic at all. Usually, it takes years of extreme frustration before people begin examining their beliefs as the source of their difficulties. However, even though beliefs are an intricate part of our identity, you don't have to take this process of self-analysis so personally. Consider the fact that none of us was born with any of our beliefs. They were all acquired in a combination of ways. Many of the beliefs that have the most profound impact on our lives were not even acquired by us as an act of free will. They were instilled by other people. And it probably won't come as a surprise to anyone that usually the beliefs that cause us the most difficulty are those that were acquired from others without our conscious consent. By that I mean beliefs that we acquired when we were too young and uninformed to realize the negative implications of what we were being taught. Regardless of the source of our beliefs, once they are born into existence, they all basically function in the same way. Beliefs have certain characteristic ways in which they do their jobs, not unlike the various parts of our bodies. For example, if you compare my eyes and your eyes, or my hands and your hands, or my red blood cells and your red blood cells, we can see that they are not exactly the same, but they have characteristics in common that cause them to function in similar ways. By the same token, a belief that life is wonderful will perform its function in the same way as a belief that life is awful. The beliefs themselves are different, and the effect that each has on the quality of the holder's life will be vastly different, but both beliefs will function in exactly the same manner. Beliefs and their impact on our lives. In the broadest sense, our beliefs shape the way we experience our lives. As I have already said, we're not born with any of our beliefs. They're acquired, and as they accumulate, we live our lives in a way that reflects what we have learned to believe. Consider how different your life would be if you had been born into a culture, religion, or political system that has very little, if anything, in common with the one you were born into. It might be hard to imagine, but what you would have learned to believe about the nature of life and how the world works may not be remotely similar to what you currently believe. Yet you would hold these other beliefs with the same degree of certainty as your current beliefs. How beliefs shape our lives. 1. They manage our perception and interpretation of environmental information in a way that is consistent with what we believe. 2. They create our expectations. Keep in mind that an expectation is a belief projected into some future moment. Since we can't expect something we don't know about, we could also say that an expectation is what we know projected into some future moment. 3. Anything we decide to do or any outward expression of behavior will be consistent with what we believe. 4. Finally, our beliefs shape how we feel about the results of our actions. There isn't much about the way we function that beliefs don't play a major role in. So what I am going to do now is give you an example I used in my first book, The Disciplined Trader, to illustrate the various functions of a belief. In the spring of 1987, I was watching a locally produced television program called Gotcha Chicago. It was about some local celebrities who played practical jokes on one another. In one segment of the program, the TV station hired a man to stand on the sidewalk along Michigan Avenue, holding a sign that read, "Free money, today only." For those of you who are not familiar with Chicago, Michigan Avenue is home to many fashionable, exclusive department stores and boutiques. The TV station gave the man a considerable amount of cash, with instructions to give money to anyone who asked for it. Now, when you consider that Michigan Avenue is one of the busiest areas of the city, and if we assume that most of the people who passed the man on the street could read the sign, how many people would you think took him up on his offer and asked for some money? Of all the people who walked by and read the sign, only one person stopped and said, "Great, may I have a quarter to buy a bus transfer?" Otherwise, no one would even go near the man. Eventually, the man grew frustrated because people weren't reacting the way he expected them to. He started crying out, "Do you want any money? Please, take my money. I can't give it away fast enough." Everyone just kept walking around him as if he didn't exist. In fact, I noticed that several people went out of their way to avoid him. As a man wearing a suit and carrying a briefcase approached, he went right up to him and said, "Would you like some money?" The man responded, "Not today." Really frustrated now, he shot back, "How many days does this happen? Would you please take this?" As he tried to hand the man some cash, the man responded with a terse "no" and walked on. What was going on here? Why wouldn't anyone, except for the person who needed a bus transfer, ask for the money? If we assume that most or all of the passersby could read the sign, but still didn't make any effort to get the money, then one possible explanation for their behavior is that they just didn't care about money. This is extremely unlikely, though, considering how much of our lives is devoted to the pursuit of money. If we agree that people could read the sign and that money is very important to most of us, then what could have stopped these people from helping themselves? The environment was making available an experience that most people would love to have. Someone giving them money with no strings attached. Yet everyone walked by, oblivious to what was awaiting them. They must not have been able to perceive what was available. That's hard to imagine, because the sign clearly stated, "Free money, today only." However, it's not hard to imagine if you consider that most people have a belief, an energized concept about how the world works, that free money doesn't exist. If free money really doesn't exist, then how does someone reconcile the obvious contradiction between that belief and the sign saying that it does? That's easy. Just decide the man with the sign is crazy. What else could account for such bizarre behavior if, in fact, free money doesn't exist? The reasoning process that could compensate for the contradiction might go something like this. Everyone knows getting money with no strings attached rarely happens. Certainly not from a stranger on one of the busiest streets in the city. In fact, if the man were really giving away money, he would already be mobbed. He might even be endangering his life. He must be crazy. I'd better take a wide path around him. Who knows what he might do? Notice that every component of the thought process described is consistent with the belief that free money doesn't exist. 1. The words "free money" were neither perceived nor interpreted as they were intended from the environment's perspective. 2. Deciding the person with the sign must be crazy created an expectation of danger, or at least a perception that caution was warranted. 3. Purposefully altering one's path to avoid the person with the sign is an action that is consistent with the expectation of danger. 4. How did each person feel about the outcome? That's difficult to say without knowing each person individually, but a good generalization would be that they felt relieved that they successfully avoided an encounter with the crazy person. The feeling of relief that resulted from avoiding a confrontation is a state of mind. Remember that how we feel, the relative degree of positively or negatively charged energy flowing through our bodies and minds, is always the absolute truth. But the beliefs that prompt any particular state of mind may not be the truth with respect to the possibilities available from the environment's perspective. Relief from confrontation was not the only possible outcome in this situation. Imagine how different the experience would be if they believed that free money exists. The process described above would be the same, except it would make the belief that free money exists seem self-evident and beyond question, just as it made the belief that free money doesn't exist seem self-evident and beyond question. A perfect example would be the one person who said, "Great, may I have a quarter for a bus transfer?" When I saw this, I had the impression this guy was probably a panhandler and would have asked anybody for a quarter. A panhandler is someone who definitely believes in the existence of free money. Therefore, his perception and interpretation of the sign were exactly what was intended by the TV station. His expectation and behavior were consistent with his belief that free money exists. And how would he feel about the results? He got his quarter, so I would assume he felt a sense of satisfaction. Of course, what he didn't know was that he could have gotten a lot more. There's another possible outcome for our scenario. Let's look at a hypothetical example of someone who believes that free money doesn't exist, but who takes a what-if approach to the situation. In other words, some people can be so intrigued and curious about the possibilities that they decide to temporarily suspend their belief that free money doesn't exist. This temporary suspension allows them to act outside the boundaries created by a belief in order to see what happens. So instead of ignoring the man with the sign, which would be our hypothetical person's first inclination, he walks up to him and says, "Give me $10. The man promptly pulls a $10 bill out of his pocket and gives it to him. What happens now? How does he feel, having experienced something unexpected that completely contradicted his belief? For most people, the belief that free money doesn't exist is acquired through unpleasant circumstances, to put it mildly. The most common way is being told that we can't have something because it's too expensive. How many times does the typical child hear, "Who do you think you are anyway? Money doesn't grow on trees, you know?" In other words, it is probably a negatively charged belief. So the experience of having money handed to him with no strings attached and without any negative comments would likely create a state of mind of pure elation. In fact, most people would be so happy that they'd feel compelled to share that happiness and this new discovery with everyone they knew. I can imagine him going back to his office or going home, and the moment he encounters someone he knows, the first words that come out of his mouth will be, "You won't believe what happened to me today." And even though he desperately wants those he meets to believe his story, they probably won't. Why? Because their belief that free money doesn't exist will cause them to interpret his story in a way that negates its validity. To take this example a little further, imagine what would happen to this person's state of mind if it occurred to him that he could have asked for more money. He is in a state of pure elation. However, the moment the thought either pops into his mind or someone he relates a story to offers the idea that he could have asked for a lot more money, his state of mind will immediately shift to a negatively charged state of regret or despair. Why? He tapped into a negatively charged belief about what it means to miss out on something or not get enough. As a result, instead of being happy over what he got, he will lament what he could have had but didn't get. Beliefs versus the truth. In all three of these examples, including the hypothetical one, everybody experienced their own unique version of the situation. If asked, each person would describe what he or she experienced from their perspective as if it were the only true and valid version of the reality of the situation. The contradiction between these three versions of the truth suggests to me a larger philosophical issue that needs to be resolved. If beliefs limit our awareness of the information being generated by the physical environment, so that what we perceive is consistent with whatever we believe, then how do we know what the truth is? To answer this question, we have to consider four ideas. 1. the environment can express itself in an infinite combination of ways. When you combine all the forces of nature interacting with everything created by humans, then add to that the forces generated by all the possible ways people can express themselves, the result is a number of possible versions of reality that would surely overwhelm even the most open-minded person. 2. Until we have acquired the ability to perceive every possible way in which the environment can express itself, our beliefs will always represent a limited version of what is possible from the environment's perspective, making our beliefs a statement about reality, but not necessarily a definitive statement of reality. 3. If you find yourself taking exception to the second statement, then consider that if our beliefs were a true, 100% accurate reflection of physical reality, then our expectations would always be fulfilled. If our expectations were always fulfilled, we would be in a perpetual state of satisfaction. How could we feel other than happy, joyful, elated, and with a complete sense of well-being if physical reality was consistently showing up exactly as we expected it to? 4. If you can accept the third statement as being valid, then the corollary is also true. If we are not experiencing satisfaction, then we must be operating out of a belief or beliefs that don't work very well relative to the environmental conditions. Taking these four ideas into consideration, I can now answer the question, what is the truth? The answer, whatever works. If beliefs impose limitations on what we perceive as possible, and the environment can express itself in an infinite combination of ways, then beliefs can only be true relative to what we are attempting to accomplish at any given moment. In other words, the relative degree of truth inherent in our beliefs can be measured by how useful they are. Each of us has internally generated forces, curiosity, needs, wants, desires, goals, and aspirations that compel or motivate us to interact with the physical environment. The particular set of steps we take to fulfill the object of our curiosity, needs, wants, desires, goals, or aspirations is a function of what we believe to be true in any given circumstance or situation. That truth, whatever it is, will determine 1. The possibilities we perceive in relation to what is available from the environment's perspective, 2. How we interpret what we perceive, 3. The decisions we make, 4. Our expectations of the outcome, 5. The action we take, and 6. How we feel about the results of our efforts. At any given moment, if we find ourselves in a state of satisfaction, happiness, or well-being in relation to whatever we are attempting to accomplish, we can say that our truth, meaning whatever beliefs we are operating from, are useful because the process, as stated before, worked. What we perceive was not only consistent with our objective, it was also consistent with what was available from the environment's perspective. Our interpretation of the information we perceived resulted in a decision, expectation, and action that were in harmony with the environmental situation and circumstance. There was no resistance or counteracting force offered by the environment, or in our own mind, that would diminish the outcome we were trying to achieve. As a result, we find ourselves in a state of satisfaction, happiness, and well-being. On the other hand, if we find ourselves in a state of dissatisfaction, disappointment, frustration, confusion, despair, regret, or hopelessness, we can say that relative to the environmental situation and circumstances, the beliefs we are operating from don't work well or at all, and therefore are not useful. Simply put, the truth is a function of whatever works in relation to what we are trying to accomplish at any given moment. Chapter 10. The Impact of Beliefs on Trading. If the external environment can express itself in an infinite combination of ways, then there's really no limit to the number and types of beliefs available to be acquired about the nature of our existence. That is an elaborate way of saying that there's a lot out there to be